You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 475 of the Fabulous Peltoncast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we're coming to you from separate locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Brenton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks. Last week, you had so much zest on the intro, and then you deleted it.
Oh, well, it didn't. I didn't record it. It wasn't that I deleted it. But yes, it was
the zestiest intro of all time.
I grated some lemon zest and put it on the intro. I mean, look. Yeah.
You could never do it that good again. It would sound like you were just imitating. It would just be like, this is the greatest intro of all time.
But it would only sound that way to you because you were the only one who heard it.
That's true. But people would know.
They could just
anyway,
tell. They could
should we
it.
Do this emergency pod style for Seafarer?
No, we've got it in the order. It's okay. I mean, if there were a shocking result at Seafarer, which there was a shocking result.
Hello.
At Tri-Cities Waterfall is at last week's Gold Cup. But we'll get to that in a second. We have to start where we were earlier Sunday. Congrats to Ichiro. Officially inducted into the MLB Hall of Fame with a well-received speech delivered in English. Love to see it from Ichiro. I thought you said you were going to say something nice about it here.
It was a great moment for Ichiro and the entire Mariners family, and I look forward to them celebrating back at T-Mobile Park here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, there you go. Ichiro Hall of Fame weekend coming up.
Stay tuned, like an hour and minutes.
Oh, no. Oh, please let that not be too many minutes. All right, congrats to Cal Raleigh, who became the 9th primary catcher in MLB history with at least 40 home runs in a season on Saturday. He's the first Mariner with 40 home runs since Nelson Cruz in 2016. Obviously, he has already moved to 41 since we posted this. Well on his way to challenging Salvador Perez's record of 48 home runs for a player whose primary position was catcher.
It's July.
It is.
It's pretty cool. It's one of those moments where it was like the Mariners lost on Sunday badly, and I looked and it was just like Cal solo home run, and I was like, great game. we've definitely gotten to that point where it's like,
that's the perspective you can have when you did not watch any of the game.
But you know what I'm saying? Like,
I do know what
you're
saying.
Back on it, and you're like, oh, the Mariners got their ass kicked, but at least Cal homered.
Exactly. Once upon a time, that was I don't know. I guess it was Nelson Cruz at that point. Whoever was hitting during the Felix era. Congrats to Skylar Diggins, who recorded the second triple-double in Storm history Monday in Connecticut with 11 points, 11 rebounds, and 11 assists.
You should have asked me to guess who had the first one, because I could have been guessing.
We would have been here all night.
It would have been like 1,000 monkeys typing on 1,000 typewriters for an eternity.
Do you even know this player?
It was the blurst of times. I do recognize the name.
Tamika Johnson, who's 5'3", had the first in 2014. Yeah. Oh, wow. That was quite a double take.
Was it steals?
No, she did. She got rebounds.
Wow.
She had the first in 2014 in an overtime game.
Maybe there's still a chance for me.
In the WNBA or in the NBA?
Go grab some boards.
This comes on the heels of Diggins recording the first triple-double in WNBA All-Star Game history, and it was also the fewest minutes ever played in a WNBA triple-double, fewer than 23. No one had done it in fewer than 25 previously.
How common are triple-doubles in the WNBA? Pretty rare, right?
Increasingly common. Caitlin Clark and Alyssa Thomas dominate the WNBA's all-time triple-double leaderboard.
Really? Already?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Alyssa Thomas obviously has been doing this now for a long period of time, but let me go pull this up on the outstanding site across the timeline that has this information easily categorized. Let's see. Oh, Jackie Young, by the way, had one tonight as well. So the triple doubles are going off. I mean, obviously there have been more lately. Scores are higher. More guard rebounding, more front court playmaking, as we've seen in the NBA as well.
Why are scores higher? Are threes going up?
Yeah. Not a ton, but gradually efficiency is getting better. So when
I'm
Tamika,
setting my calendar right now for, I'm thinking 3 years before I see a TikTok about how 3-point shooting has ruined the WNBA.
oh wow, well we'll have really made it then. So when Tamika Johnson did this in 2014, no one had done it in 9 years. Actually, consecutive triple doubles in WNBA history were recorded at Key Arena because Cheryl Swoopes had the previous one, the first ever playoff triple double against the Storm in the deciding Game 3 of their first round series in 2005. One of the most crushing moments in my time working for the Storm, when they lost that Game 3 at home to the Houston Comets. But that was the sixth ever triple double at that point in the 18th season of the WNBA. Since then, there have been 12 seasons. And there have been, across the timeline, is counting Skyla Diggins in the All-Star game, there have been 42 of them. And of those, since 2021, because Sabrina Ionescu also has a few, 39 of the 48 all-time have come since 2021. So a pretty massive explosion here. And I think Caitlin is already second all-time, although. It's not giving me the totals that easily right now, so I will have to do another search. You can fill here.
I'll be here. I've already moved on to looking at further parts. I've got jokes coming up. It's
No,
good.
Caitlin is still tied for third with Candace Parker. Sabrina Ionescu is second with
I
four.
regret
Those
asking the question.
are the only people with more than two. So, anyways, congrats to Skylar Diggins.
We go. Yeah. Feel free to delete all of that. There was some Google searching in there, some pausing, asking me to fill.
On a sadder note, this week we're remembering Spokane native Ryan Sandberg, who died Monday at age 65 after battling prostate cancer that had spread. Sandberg had the most career hits in All-Star appearances with 10 of any player born in Washington, per Alex Meyer of Mariners PR. He's one of three Hall of Famers born in Washington. Certainly someone who was an MLB fixture when we started watching the league. Have a vivid memory of him retiring mid-season in 1994 before he came back to actually have two really productive seasons in 1996 and 1997. And certainly an exemplary player and well regarded in terms of his post-playing career as well. So a real loss for baseball and for the state of Washington. All right, with that, it is time to talk hydroplane racing.
Okay, I thought you were really building up for.
Congrats to Dave Vilwalk, who tied Chip Hanauer with his 11th Gold Cup victory Sunday at the Tri-Cities Water Follies. A wild final heat saw High Points leader Andrew Tate and the U91 Goodman Real Estate relegated to the trailer position, even though there were only six boats still competing at that point, because the seventh had to withdraw due to damage suffered earlier in the day in testing. But Andrew Tate was disqualified in one of the heats due to an N2 violation for overtaxing the engine, basically, and losing, getting a zero for that set of heats meant that he had the fewest points of any remaining boat, and therefore had to start 5 seconds after the field in the final, had no realistic chance to win. On the water, we saw the U8 Beacon Electric, driven by J. Michael Kelly, hold off teammate U9 Beacon Plumbing, two-time defending Water Follies champ Corey Peabody for what seemed like the win. But both boats, plus Gunnar O'Farrell in the U21 Spirit of America, obviously all three of these people are from Western Washington, jumped the gun. That gave the win to Vilwalk, also from Western Washington. His first race victory since 2012, when he at that point
Hello,
won his 10th Gold Cup. So, look,
Sonny Hayes. You can suck it as an old man racing. Do you know who that is?
no.
It's the Brad Pitt from the movie F1, who's an
Oh, that
old
makes
man
sense.
who comes back to race fast and loose, exploiting rules that were out there. Dave Vilwalk, 10 years older than Brad Pitt, on the water picking up the victory. It is a film come to life in
Wow.
hydroplane racing this
When
weekend.
they make this is the follow-up to the movie Madison, about the Miss Madison's
No
victory.
one will see
Still
it.
have never seen it, although I gotta say I'm
You
not
are the greatest hydroplane fan of all time and haven't seen it.
gotta say I'm not Not eagerly seeking out all of Jim Caviezel's work these days.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, let's get on to the Andrew Tate news.
Not that, Andrew Tate. Not that. No relation. Unrelated.
Oh my God.
The rough weekend for Andrew Tate meant the two
He's had
beefing.
worse.
Both owned by Strong Racing now top the High Points leaderboard with Peabody ahead of Kelly for first place. But just 5,000. Wait, no, that's the wrong number. I don't know why I get that. I believe it's 524 points separate first and fifth place in the High Points standing with two races remaining. So lots on the line.
No one knows how many points you get for a hydroplane
Interesting.
race, so you could have just gone. You could
That's
have been
true.
like, that is a small amount.
That's a fair point. It's up to 400 per heat. And then 100 for qualifying. So the Gold Cup requires four sets of heats. So last weekend there was a maximum of 1,700 points. This weekend they're only going to run three heats at Seafair, so a maximum of 1,300 points available.
Wait, so what do you mean they're only going to run three heats at Seafair?
That's been the traditional Seafair
Like 1A,
format.
1B, 2A, 2B, 3A, 3B?
Correct.
Okay, that's six total races, though.
Six total
Six
races before the final, correct.
total heats. The
Four of
heats are the
those,
pair together.
correct. You
Got
can
it.
only because the each individual boat typically only appears in one of the two sets, unless they have fall below six boats, and then they would probably go to a kind of a format where they would just choose among those boats and have more than three sets of heats.
Try to figure that out, AI.
Oh no, not a chance. Tri-Cities officials said that was a possibility. They thankfully didn't have to go with it because they finished with six. So just seven total boats entered Wally or Follies, four of them owned by two race teams. After Miss Madison, the reigning High Points champion, encountered financial difficulties and sold its two boats to Bruce Ratchford of Tri-Cities, including the U91. Ratchford also purchased the U27, driven by Vilwalk from Wiggins Racing. So it's Strong Racing is also based in Tri-Cities. Tri-Cities is the epicenter of unlimited hydroplane ownership at this point, even though Western Washington still produces all the drivers. Madison
It's
leased
like
a
how
boat.
Italians produce every manager in soccer.
Very similar, yeah. Madison leased a boat to run Is Miss Madison in the hometown race, but is not competing elsewhere this season. Part of the reason we have the low boat count. Ratchford and Strong Racing have partnered to take over expanded H1 streaming this year. They had some really good features between the heats that was nice to see. But they also are having to add race sites after Guntersville, Alabama decided not to bring the Unlimiteds back after issues with weather forced the races to be canceled this season and had in the past. That leaves just four currently on the schedule for 2026. We'll see if they can add any. The anticipated return of the Detroit Hydro Fest, which sadly was never immortalized in Detroiters, still yet to materialize. So we've just got Madison, Seattle, Tri-Cities, and San Diego is kind of the four classic historic sites. So as we look ahead to this weekend, I would still say, despite the rough performance on Sunday, Andrew Tate, probably the favorite. Corey Peabody in the U9, also a strong contender. J. Michael Kelly always does well in his hometown race in Seattle. Also, I think the fact that it's a 2 mile course on Lake Washington for Seafair is compared to a longer 2.5 mile course in the Tri-Cities. Basically, that means the water follies kind of tends to fa favor the team with higher top end speed, more acceleration in the straightaways, whereas the ability to get inside lanes and your ability to turn is more important at Seafair. And those are things at which J. Michael Kelly tends to excel. So he's done quite well here. But really, and then you certainly can't rule out Dave Wilwalk. He even though the final win was very unexpected and took the other boats sort of taking themselves out of it by jumping the gun, it was still a strong weekend for Wilwalk, who won multiple heats and continues to be a formidable racer at age 71. So there you go. There's your
Is he
Seafair preview.
behind? So let's say that Dave Vilwalk's falling behind here, right? Is it because of the racing or is it just because of the boat?
A little from column A, a little from column B. Obviously, his reflexes are not what they were 30 years ago when he was, first coming on the scene. Is 1996 was the first year that he won the National High Points title as a
And how
driver.
fast and dangerous are these boats?
Vilwack did flip in Madison, or maybe that was in Guntersville. I can't remember, but one of those two races, he did flip.
God, I could see the movie.
thankfully, they are no longer fatal. These flips, not for a quarter century now, and that's
In the
the
movie, they are, though.
yes, they would play it up that
When he's
the
getting
number.
a lecture from the pit, what's the
You're saying the equivalent of a pit bot?
not
No,
pit boss. That's not the word. I'm trying not to say that word.
okay,
The
crew chief,
crew chief.
or would it be from the owner of the team,
The owner, I think it's the crew chief. No, it's the
or
old
maybe the
Grizzled,
commissioner?
played by Robert Duvall. Or the commissioner. You're playing fast and loose with the rules, Vilwalk.
I mean, there was that period of time where it seemed like Vilwalk had like kind
You
of
act like you
lost
want to
it,
die out there on the course.
got disqualified at Seafair when he was driving the Beacon Plumbing, owned by the late Billy Shoemaker. And that was a long time ago that this happened. I forget which year it was, that this happened. That was like his comeback, and it was like over a decade ago, I think. Dave Dubois disqualified Seafair 2014. Yeah, he was suspended for the rest of Seafair after a collision. And that was, again,
Nice.
his comeback 11 years ago. People thought he was too old then. And now he's still winning gold cups.
It is. I'm happy about Dave. It's one of those things where, like, I don't as strongly as I can feel about any hydroplane driver. We're always kind of anti-Dave Vilwalk, right?
Certainly during the Budweiser era, yes.
I don't. It's not because of being anti-Budweiser conceptually. I feel like that's important to explain the distinction. It was
But it
more
was
just
like
they were really good.
they were the Yankees at that point in particular. I mean, they were like
They were the Yankees of this
Miss
niche sport that happens in four cities throughout the country.
Budweiser.
And one of them is Madison, and it's not in Wisconsin.
At that point, it was like 8 to 10 races per year. Like there was some stat I was reading about Greg Hopp, who's still around driving the lighter class. I forget what they even call it these day. Possibly, I don't think it's Grand Prix. It was Grand Prix for a while, Grand Prix West, whatever they call it. He won the lights championship, and it's funny that they still refer to him as like the younger son of Jerry Hopp, who was an unlimited driver when we were first started watching this in the early 90s. And Greg
Great
Hopp
hot,
is now
great.
55 years old, so he's still the newcomer to the scene. I don't know where I was going with that one
I
though.
mean, Andrew Tate, I still think of him as Mark Tate's son,
Yes, understandably.
with a very unfortunate name.
Just probably should go by Andy or Drew. There's a lot of options when you're named Andrew, but
He's
in
the one who
fairness,
sucks.
why change my name? He's the one who sucks. Yeah, he was such a period of like Miss Budweiser was the dominant race team of the 70s and the 80s, but it was really in the 90s where everyone else started to kind of not have the resources, and Budweiser still did. And Vilwalk, one of the conversations, there was a Tri-City Herald piece by Jeff Morrow over the weekend talking about like if you were putting together sort of the perfect race team of all time, like who would you want as your driver, who would you want as your crew chief, and all sorts of these other roles. And people mentioned Dave Vilwalk for multiple of these roles because he was a crew chief for Chip Hanauer's High Points Champion boats before starting to drive in his own right at the unlimited level, is regarded as the finest at working with propellers and sort of,
Used to be the finest at everything.
but he
When
was. And so Budweiser was completely
the rookie judges him because he comes in fast and loose.
done. He
You
used to
act
be the
like you
best.
invented the sport. It's like, look, son, you don't know about Dave Vilwalk. He used to be the finest at everything. He built the boats. He was the crew
You're giving
chief.
away too
He
much at this
drove the
point. Let's
boats.
just write the script.
Let's not.
Let's get Kevin Artemitz to do
Get me to Madison,
it.
Indiana. Let's write the script for the movie that isn't popular enough for Guntersville,
Mean, it's
Alabama.
popular enough. Just the weather does not work for
All
it,
right,
it
fine,
turns out.
fine.
Guntersville, not Guntersville. Yeah, so I mean, is I look at the state of unlimited hydroplane racing. I'm not sure how many of these we have
That's I
left.
mispronounced so many words and cities, and Guntersville, Alabama is the one that you take offense to. You're like, that's
The way you pronounced it sounded
the
like
buck stops here.
it sounded offensive, like you were taking a shot.
I had never heard of the city until this very moment.
That's true. That is undoubtedly true. Anyways, I don't know how many of these we have left, and it's a bummer that the Storm are played on Sunday afternoon and on ABC against the Indiana Fever. And while Caitlin Clark will not be there, perhaps may not be there on the court, I will be there. So I will not be at Seafair Sunday for a second consecutive year. I will not be there. So.
It's one of those things, like, I just like knowing that Seafair is happening. I haven't attended it in, I don't know how many years.
Pre-pandemic number of years.
Definitely pre-pandemic number of years, but especially for the Sunday, like, I haven't paid to attend for a very long time. But it's been, I don't know, 17 years, something like that, maybe more. But I like knowing that it's happening. And same with, like, I'm not even watching on TV at this point. You know, the amount that I'm engaging with it is hearing you talk about it on the podcast.
But it
and
is a
then
Pelton Cast tradition.
deleting my search history after I Google some of the drivers. Just being like, please do not feed me any other content. I like knowing that it's happening year after year.
Should I ask an AI program whether it's that Andrew Tate? Well,
You might want to.
you know what I like knowing exists, and not because it's just there, but because I'm gonna eat it. The Lil Woody's Poliachi pizza burger collab.
Hello. Have you
Today was
had
the
this
first day of
before?
this. Had this before. I mean,
Have
it's
you
new
had
this
the,
year.
is this the first time we've ever done this?
The first time we've ever done this. So as we talked about on the pod a few weeks
Wow.
back when they first teased this, it isn't quite exactly what I was perhaps conceptualizing from the initial teaser video. So it is a round slice of pizza, Poliachi style pizza, kind of similar to a frozen pizza, a mini frozen pizza, personal frozen pizza that you'd heat up. It's that on top of a burger patty.
How dare you insult that?
What?
You're comparing it to like a Red Baron like mini
I'm
pizza,
just
right?
trying to get under people have people understand the size and the sh in of it.
You don't have to say frozen though. You could compare it to like a personal pan pizza,
But it's
right?
not that large. It's smaller than that because it's got to be burger patty sized.
Okay. It feels a little bit like you're offending. This is me taking offense now to your description of pizzas.
Do you think that I'm not sufficiently in favor of our sponsor, Poliachi Pizza?
I'm
Is
just
that your
saying.
point here? You think that I don't think that their
I want to
quality
put
is
some
good enough?
respect on the quality of the pizza's name because it looks
But it's
pretty
not like
interesting.
what I originally was envisioning was sort of like an actual Poliachi slice wrapped around a burger. And it's not quite that.
I would have been
It's
there for that also, just noting.
undoubtedly. But so that's basically acting as the top bun. On top of a burger, you've got mozzarella cheese, Poliachi pizza spice aioli, Mama Lil's peppers, which really kind of make the whole thing, I gotta say, basil and red onion on a Lil Woody's bottom bun. That's the pizza burger. So they've tried a few different versions of these over the years as part of this Poliachi Lil Woody's collab. Like Poliachi is
You said this
what?
is the first time.
This is the first time they've done this.
This particular burger. Tell me about the previous versions.
I mean, I think they had like basically pizza ingredients on a burger. Like there was
Okay, but they've
slices
never
of
gone so
pepperoni.
far as to have a like slice of pizza.
That's what I'm telling you.
We are heading toward. You know what I mean? Like you have the like the like history of man evolution, right? We're getting toward the place, the fully realized Homo sapien version of.
We're currently at Homo erectus.
I don't think we're quite there right now.
Okay.
This is a common ancestor, but like the what we need. I want to hear your review first, and then because I have to try this burger.
So I have a thought for you.
Okay.
I have to go.
I'm not going to customize it. Is that your thought?
No.
Oh, okay. This is a thought about when.
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear it.
I have to go to the Renton area near the Valley General Hospital tomorrow afternoon. If you wanted to meet me there, I could potentially pick up one of these at Lil Woody's and bring it to you.
Hello. What time?
Two.
Perfect. Lock it in. I mean, my only concern is that it's not going to be as fresh as it could
obviously.
Be. Because it's going to have traveled from White Center to Renton in that time period. But I need to try it.
Obviously.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm good. I've got no meetings.
So, you know, I had Little Woody's tonight with...
Crazy thing on the calendar. Okay.
My wife and a friend of hers. And they were both horrified at this idea of combining the pizza with the burger. And
they were... It's horrified like a way that you describe something that you're really happy about.
But let me tell you, the tomato sauce, like the cheese, it just worked. The alchemy
really,
was just
really,
right. Like
it tasted good.
They slapped on this.
Did
they
it
clearly
taste like a pizza and a burger at the same time?
There were some bites where it did, yes. There were other bites where it tasted like a burger that was kind of pizza flavored.
Okay.
And just a pizza. But when you got them both together in the right combination, it did taste like you were eating both a burger and a pizza, which, you know, yeah.
That's the goal, right?
I'm not saying that I'm going to eat that on a daily basis for health reasons, but for this, it is at the same time, obviously, individually, yes.
We're bordering on the greatest quote of all time. Your scientists are so preoccupied with whether or not they could. They didn't stop to think if they should. However,
they should.
They should in this case. I'm going to try it, but I know that I'm going in with the perspective that I might even make this myself.
It's not a bad idea. So
Wait,
this is through Monday. This is available.
I might, if I do this, I will post it on the Peltoncast Instagram. The next time that I go to Poliachi, because I always have to make food for Marco anyway, right? I could just make burgers. Take a slice. It'd probably have to be two, is what I'm thinking, right? Because they're on the when you get the pizza to go, a large pizza to go, they slice them pretty thin, right? And it has to be thick enough to be able to cover a burger patty. So I'm thinking two pizza slices right in the middle, burger everything.
All right. Well, I'm curious to see how you do this, but
you don't think I can do it?
I'm not. I'm just saying I don't think you can do it. I'm just curious to see how you do it.
Okay. No, I have to try this.
All right. Well, yes, you do. I mean, I recommend it highly.
My favorite part of the podcast is when we make actual plans.
Yes. Logistics live on the air. All right. With that, it is not your time for your favorite segment because you have decided that we are going to save that until after the trade deadline this week. Well, way to explain yourself. Dynamite dropping money.
You explained it.
Okay.
I'm such a Gemini that I thought about even making both of the takes about it, but it's kind of interesting because you wouldn't believe this. I trust, and he could lose this trust, Jerry DePoto so much that I don't think that the Mariners are going to do anything out of pocket at this trade deadline. They might do nothing.
I don't think they're going to do nothing. I definitely think they're landing at least one relief.
They might not.
Obviously, on top of having already traded for Josh Naylor.
They might do nothing else big. But I trust Jerry DePoto enough that I don't think he's going to make the kind of trade that it just doesn't really happen that much in the MLB anymore, where people make just like wild trades. But I trust Jerry DePoto enough that I just don't think any of the Mariners' top prospects are.
Are we talking about at the trade deadline? It doesn't happen.
Or in general, where you trade
it did
a
happen
bunch
with
of
Juan Soto.
Yeah, but Juan Soto was a young player in his prime.
So you're saying the
I'm talking about for 40 games for 50
the Heathcliff Slocum trade doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, it probably does. I'm sure there are examples, but it seems much less common now.
And some of the reporting is that the Diamondbacks are all asking for multiple of the Mariners' top 100 prospects in return for Gino. Like, obviously, that doesn't make sense for them to do.
I mean, this was another take that I considered delivering, which was basically like, why are we reporting on things that the Diamondbacks are? It's clearly in bad faith that this is happening.
In bad faith.
It's Tuesday of the deadline talk. It's not Friday of the deadline talk or Thursday of the deadline talk.
Friday of the deadline talk is going to be very different. It's going to be how close the Danny Ainge was to landing the best player on the market.
The But like,
Is that an outdated joke now? I don't know.
no, I think people still talk about that. But basically, like, of course the Diamondbacks are asking for that right now. They're not up against the wall. Eugenio Suarez has very little value to the Diamondbacks for the rest of the season. If they get to Friday and they haven't traded him, the Diamondbacks have failed at the deadline because even lesser tier prospects are more valuable than Gino is to them at
Correct.
this point. Like the Diamondbacks have put themselves into a position whereas the other teams kind of have more leverage than they do, right? Like the Mariners, the Cubs, the Yankees. The Yankees already made a trade for a third
Yankees are
baseman.
out of it. Yes. Traded for Ryan McMahon.
I don't know if I'd say they're out of it, but they're pretty unlikely. And I think it was partially like the Diamondbacks misplayed their hand here, especially
Perhaps. I mean, it's not over
the
yet.
Diamondbacks may have misplayed their hand here. And they also are trading with somebody in Jerry who just, this isn't what he does. You have to kind of know who you're talking to and know the history. Obviously, the D-backs have traded with the Mariners before in a deal that,
Literally last week.
well, yes, that one. But I think even the previous one, right? The Paul Sewald trade, like Jerry kind of won the deal.
I think both sides probably feel good about it at this point. The years
I
under
mean,
JMX, I don't know if you'd know this, they did go to the World Series that year.
doesn't really register for a Mariners fan what that looks like.
Oh.
But longer term, like the Mariners have benefited more from it, especially with the way Canzone's been playing the last month. It's just not a thing that he's going to do. Like they know who Jerry is. They know that he's not going to trade one of these prospects for the 40 games of Gino. And also, like, I don't know where he Ben Williamson. I want to kind of say he single-handedly won the Mariners a game defensively on Monday night with the, it wasn't just one play. There were multiple plays. And Ben Williamson's defense is going to be really hard to take off the field. Now, obviously, Gino's a pretty huge upgrade hitting-wise, but he's looking a lot like a DH to the Mariners right now. And that kind of brings up some other problems, like then Jorge Polanco has to play in the field a lot more. Mitch Garver has to play catcher occasionally. Like the
I
Mariners.
mean, I think they would play. I mean, I guess they could play Gino at third and DH Polanco, or play DH Polanco, a DH Gino and play Polanco at second would both be options. And
That's what
some of
I'm
that might
saying.
be platoon wise.
Yeah, sure. But like I don't know how much they need Cole Young on the field, but like Gino doesn't exactly answer a lot of Mariners' questions right now. And frankly, I don't think the Mariners have, aside from finding another bullpen arm, that many questions to answer.
Well, number five starter, where are we standing on our aces count right now? I mean, it does,
I
there's
actually
optimism that Bryce Miller will be back.
sure there's that. And I think Logan Evans, look, pitches left the ballpark today, and there were too many hits. To me, I care about strikeouts so much. And this was actually one of the better performances from that perspective from Logan Evans. I kind of thought his stuff looked pretty good. So I was a little bit, like this, I think I'm assuming it was a career high in strikeouts for him today, which is kind of like a longer term portent for Logan Evans than necessarily the bad performance. And there are other things that the team looks at. They don't just look at like, did this player do good? Did this player do bad?
Of course.
But Gino doesn't answer that question either. He's an
The
upgrade
number
in the
five
lineup.
starter? No, I don't think he answers that question.
He is an upgrade in the lineup, possibly a huge upgrade. They
Everyone
know what to
knows that the Mariners' most important pitcher is now at AAA.
Who's that?
Miles Mastrobuoni.
Oh yeah. So I just don't know if they're a Gino away either. I mean, look, like we said about Josh Naylor last week, it's important to have a lot of major league bats as you head to September. There's injuries are a possibility always. So, but he's not that versatile and he's not a very good defender. And he's hit in Seattle before and it's gone good.
Went well. I mean, let's be clear. Gino was very productive offensively his 2 seasons. And, like, obviously, the possibility that the Mariners will have to give up any type of significant prospect for him after salary dumping him does reflect a miscalculation by Jerry Dipoto in the front office in the midst of a strikeout hysteria after the 2023 season winter eye.
I mean, his second season, it was a 714 OPS, like 22 homers.
What's the WRC plus on that at T-Mobile Park? Probably pretty good, right? You don't have that information readily available.
No, I don't have it up. I've got Baseball Reference up.
All right, I'll look
but,
up.
But also, he's been way better this season than any year since 2019.
If you're expecting to get, you know, wow, Cal Raleigh and Gino Suarez going back and forth every day for the MLB home run lead if you trade for him, like, no, that's not realistic.
Because Cal has way too many homers.
I mean, Gino got pretty close for a minute there.
Cal's got 5 homer lead right now.
Hit in the hand, left. This was yesterday's game, I believe, Monday's game. Finger, the MRI and CAT scan on his finger were negative, so he is day to day, not a concern there.
It's a little bit of a concern. Not a huge concern there. And if you lose any games from Gino, if you're trading for him right now, the value goes way down. So
I don't know if I would go that far.
I think it's the type of situation, like the Diamondbacks. Like
105 WRC plus in 2023. So not outstanding, but 132 in 2022, which was actually before this season, well, the second best of his career.
That was a great season. But what has it been the 2 years in Arizona?
115 and then 143 this year.
I mean, that's the outlier, right? You hope he continues Correct. For the rest of the season, but.
But if you
and
looked
I also
at,
I hope Gino goes out and gets paid as well. You know, like he's probably gonna get a deal, but there I could see the market looking for him a little bit like a 2-year deal or
probably.
Something after this.
The projections generally cluster around the 115 to 120 range for him the rest of the season.
Okay, which is quite a bit lower than it has been. Major League Baseball teams are not stupid. And I think the Diamondbacks are obviously they're not either. I get what they're doing and why they're doing it, but again, I think they might have misplayed their hand in the situation when the prospects may be lower now that we know that the Yankees probably aren't in the mix. And for the Mariners, there's going to be, like I said last week, there's an offer on the table from the Mariners of how far they're willing to go, and the Diamondbacks are balking at that offer right now, but or at least not willing to get there because they hope that somebody else emerges. And I'm just not sure if that other team is there. And if we get to Thursday and that other deal hasn't materialized and Jerry is still willing to get to whatever, I mean, I don't think we're talking top 10 prospects in the organization. I'd be shocked if we were. If it was anybody significant. And I would
be surprised, but maybe back half of the top 10.
I would also be unhappy with that. Because again, you know, the arbitration years for some of these players, even if they never pan out, the possibility of that, the other deals that you can include them in, you know, because it's not just losing that, like that player to that team. It's also the opportunity to take one of those players and include them in a package when a superstar pops up, you know, like there's other things that can be done when you have the kind of prospects that the Mariners have. They're in one of the best positions short-term and long-term in baseball.
This
right
is
now.
The we're doing you a favor. The Mariners saying our view is like if we stay in contention for a long period of time, especially the way that the MLB playoffs work, eventually one of those runs is going to translate into, you know, an ALCS and a statue and probably a World Series appearance. So, you know, we'll see if they deviate from that. I don't know that I expect that they will either, but we'll see.
Jerry's made mistakes, but he's good at this. You know, like the salary dump for Gino was a mistake. And I do think there was a little bit of, I don't know whether it came from him or where it came from the organization, but they sort of lost sight. But at the same time, like the Kelenic dump wasn't a mistake necessarily. No. And I don't know if you could have predicted that Gino would have gotten as much better as he's gotten right now.
You couldn't have predicted that, but they also, I think, were predicting that he was going to potentially even get worse than he had been his last season in Seattle. And even in 2024, that was not the case. And, you know, he's certainly worth his salary, I think, during his first season in Arizona. Adam Jude of the Seattle Times reported Monday before that Ben Williamson defensive gem, the game that you referenced, that the, you know, yes, the Mariners would like to reunite with Geno, but his trade talks are expected to escalate in the next 24 hours. Sources say the more urgent need for the Mariners is a proven late inning pitcher. And because of the various bullpen options available in the market, there's a growing optimism around the club that a deal will come together before Thursday's deadline. So, a couple other things we should talk about. Josh Naylor can't stop stealing bases since he became a Mariners player. I had no idea this was coming when they first got him, I gotta say. And I'm enjoying it quite a lot. I'm enjoying the Josh Naylor experience, despite being relatively down on the trade. Unsurprisingly, talked myself into him pretty quickly. Also, second half, Julio, 4 home runs in 3 games for the first time in his career during the series against the Angels. He loves hitting at Angels Stadium in Anaheim. Had a couple of hits on Tuesday night, even in that loss. Julio hitting up right on schedule.
What is Josh Naylor's WRC plus with the Mariners? Can you find it? I mean, he's been a beast in these handful of games.
I mean, it's going to be for 2 games, I think, because I don't think it's updated through tonight. So, and I don't know that they necessarily, I don't know for sure that they have that split, but let's see here. Yeah, they just have his overall total.
The 900 OPS. But I like the lineup as is. I'm totally fine
well,
with the lineup as is.
Well, some news about the lineup as is, by the way, we should mention. Luke Rayleigh, Dean Wilson said post-game Tuesday, headed to the IL with back stiffness. And Sean Locklear, No, not the Seahawks offensive lineman, Tyler Locklear, in the midst of just tearing the cover off the ball at AAA Tacoma, headed to the major leagues for the first time this season to replace him on the roster on Wednesday, assuming he isn't traded before then, which seems unlikely. It's kind of amazing that Donovan Solongo is still hanging around on this roster.
They're going to find a way to give Tyler Locklear every chance.
I don't think that Donovan Solano will be on the roster after Thursday or Friday or, you know, whenever these players report. But Donovan Solano, now your number 3 option on the depth chart at first base. Or you would just really like to have as many guys who are primarily first basemen or exclusively first basemen.
I'm a little shocked that they felt the need to call up Tyler Locklear, but I think it's more of...
I think this was, we know he's going to replace Solano after the deadline anyway, so let's just make the move now.
It was only 49 plate appearances his last time up. You know, like the experience feels like a little bit longer than it was, but you know, that's not enough time to fully judge. I think Tyler Locklear has,
without question,
I mean, probably more pop, definitely more pop than Ben Williamson, somebody like that. Like we would expect more from him offensively than maybe Cole Young or Ben Williamson right now.
I would say unquestionably so. As we talked about last week, the standards are just very different for first basemen than they are players at other positions. But
and Williamson is just, he's such a phenomenal defender that, I mean, he has given the Mariners a very hard decision at third base. If he was worse, and he's a not great hitter, but he is such a great defender in an important position that it makes the Geno conversation a little bit different. Right now,
last year at AAA, Locklear had an 801 OPS. It's 945 so far this season. He's got 19 home runs, which is more than he had last year across all the teams, minor league teams that he played for, in 74 fewer plate appearances. So some good stuff. And Tyler Locklear, I mean, he's 24. Like he's still a major player.
I freaking like
developing.
Tyler Locklear. I'm sure he was down there just this whole time, just mashing, being like, can you just hurry up and call me up? Like, what do I have to do
I'm sure
right
he
now?
Was.
It's a hitter's park.
It's a hitter's stadium? League.
Okay.
Let's put it that way. It's more, I think, other stadiums than Tacoma in the Pacific Coast League, but you know, certainly Albuquerque, Sacramento, as we now know, both in the Pacific Coast League and in the and in Major League Baseball Hitters Park. There's some others in there, Albuquerque. Anything else in the Mariners?
We're going to see after this week, but I, you know, the Fangraphs numbers, they all look good.
We're also going to see whether there's an emergency pod later this week.
I think the Mariners are in a very good situation right now overall. And like we talked about, like Julio's hitting, Randy's hitting, Cal, Naylor, like the lineup's just, it's it's feeling pretty good overall.
After they scored one run for the second time in three games.
It happens. Severino's like kryptonite.
I'm not worried about it either, but it is funny timing. All right, let's get into the roundup, starting with Seattle Sounders, who played a relatively low-scoring games by their standards on Saturday. Atlanta United opened the scoring in the 7th minute, credited as a Yomar Gomez Andrade own goal, but the Sounders rallied with an equalizer by Pedro de la Vega, a terrific goal in transition, and then went ahead in stoppage time, which was 8 minutes. No, that seems like a lot to you, with Osase De Rosario's first career goal to take a 2-1 lead, only for Atlanta to get a screamer from Alexei Mirinchuk to produce a 2-2 draw. XG in this one back in a more normal range, 0.8 for each team, but they overperformed it with their scores from outside the box. Sounders still fourth in the West standings entering the League's Cup, but now only 1 point up on Portland and 2 up on LAFC, two teams they'd love to hold off. On Tuesday, the Sounders signed 18-year-old midfielder Snyder Brunel to a homegrown player contract on Tuesday, adding midfield depth. Out of the League's Cup, Brunel has spent the past 3 seasons with Tacoma Defiance and appeared with the Sounders twice last season in the U.S. Open Cup on short-term contracts. Brian Schmetzer also cited his performance when he was training with the first team in, I forget what the name of the place in Spain is that they traditionally travel to, but I believe Schmetzer noted he had to play 120 minutes in a match due to the Sounders' depth and injury issues at that point, and really impressed at as a teenager with his ability to hang in there against European competition. But the important note here is confirmed by Sounder at Heart after Schmetzer alluded to it. Snyder Brunel is, of course, nephews of Mark Brunel.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I'll take
it. So there is a relation. Sounders open League's Cup play Thursday, hosting Cruz Azul in a group featuring, under the current format now, they'll play all Liga MX opponents. Santos Laguna comes to Lumen Field on Sunday. Both of those matches are on FS1 for non-MLS season pass subscribers who can't always see the team play. Cruz Azul unbeaten through the first 3 matches of the Apertura in Liga MX after finishing third in last season's Clausura, where Santos Laguna finished in the cellar with just 2 wins in 17 matches. So that the better chance, certainly, for the Sounders to get a victory here. This is no longer a group format, so advancement is based on total points through 3 matches across all MLS teams. The top 4 will advance to the quarterfinals later in August. Seattle Reign FC finished their prep for the second half of the NWSL schedule by traveling down to Portland for a friendly on Saturday and winning a shootout 5-4. After neither team found the goal through 90 minutes, Claudia Dickey had a pair of saves in the shutout, including the final shot after teams reached sudden death. Mia Fischel started again for the Reign, played the entire first half, continuing to work up. Expect to see her start in her first NWSL match on Friday. Is the Reign are back at it for real, hosting Angel City. As a reminder, Reign are 6th in the NWSL standings. Angel City is 11th with a -4 goal differential, largely due to their defensive woes. The 24 goals the Angels have allowed are 3rd most in NWSL. Seattle Storm finished off a 2-1 road trip highlighted by blowout wins over Chicago, as we talked about last week, in Connecticut. It was a great 3-game stretch for the Storm bench, which played well in both blowouts, but also got the Storm back in their loss at Washington on Saturday with a 16-0 run to start the 4th quarter after the starters had really struggled offensively. Erica Wheeler was the only starter to make a field goal after halftime. So when they came back in with the bench starting to tire late in this game, the Mystics were able to pull away. Brittany Sykes was a real problem for the Storm. Sonia Citron kind of outplayed Gabby Williams pretty badly in this one. Dominique Malunga, though, led that bench charge with 6 points, 3 rebounds, and 2 steals in 6 minutes of fourth quarter action, coming off her first career double-double at Chicago, then followed up by scoring double figures again on Monday in Connecticut as she played a career-high 25 minutes. Most on the team in
led
that
the team
lopsided
minutes.
Win. Yeah, you love to
this
see
is
it.
What should be happening in games like this, especially.
Right. Games like this, for sure. But you see Malunga continuing to get it. You know, it's not, you can't say it's like every game she gets a little bit better because there are steps forward and there are steps back. But the continued progress over the course of the season is trending in the right direction. We are seeing so many flashes of brilliance. And we are right there on the precipice of the first Don Malunga game dunk There was a moment on Saturday in Washington where she tipped away a pass in transition and just wasn't able to quite carry the ball, gather the ball cleanly, had a layup where she was right at the rim. Same thing in the fourth quarter at Connecticut. It is going to happen any game now. You can
Hello.
feel it.
Okay, so I think, yes, Dominic Malunga is starting to get it. I think the one who's starting to get it, though, is Noel Quinn. And when you look at the minute distribution in this game against Connecticut, they're 4-21, right? The Storm were doing what they were supposed to be doing in this game. You know, like it got closer than it needed to be because the Suns scored a bunch in the fourth quarter, right? I'm
Because
assuming.
mostly because the Storm couldn't score at all in the fourth quarter. This was where the bench did not play as well when it was exclusively them on the court.
I think it was just like you're up. I mean, how much were they up at that point?
They were up 32 at one point. I
It's a
didn't
different speed of basketball when you're up 32 points.
not worried about it.
To see a distribution of minutes like this, where Ezzie's playing 17 minutes, where Nneka's playing 19 minutes, less than 20 minutes in a game, you need to get these players rest in situations like that against Connecticut. And that's what they haven't been doing
I mean,
throughout this season.
they did do it, I would say, in fairness, in the game at Chicago as well. Like this is a trend now,
That's
though. You
my point. I'm not saying it's not, I'm saying this is a more recent thing
Right.
that Noel Quinn has understood. You have to have more than seven or eight players on a
and the
roster.
bench has played well enough to justify it.
But they were also playing well enough to justify it early.
No, the bench was not playing well enough to justify it early. Do
It's
not agree
it
with that assessment. Malunga was having games where she justified it, but it's also Lexi Brown who's been more productive lately. Alicia Clark, after going through an extended shooting drought, starting to be more of a threat offensively again. So, a lot of positive signs with the Storm bench.
I mean, the 40-point victory against Chicago is the same, but it wasn't as drastic. It was even further in this Connecticut game. And
It
you
was even
just.
further for Malunga. I mean, Nneka played 20 minutes in that game against Chicago.
But considering this was a 16-point win and that was almost 40-point win, like having those two
Well,
be close, I think Noel Quinn is starting to figure it out. And
I mean,
this is going to benefit the team long term.
I agree. The difference here is the Storm led that one by 27 going into the fourth quarter. The Connecticut game, they led by 29 going into the fourth quarter. So the
Okay, fair
difference was
enough.
strictly in how the bench performed in that fourth quarter, not how they played over the first three.
All right. Well, either way, it is nice to see this distribution of minutes.
It's great to see. And it comes before they actually get an extended and now difficult travel back from Connecticut, but they have 3 days off before their first homestand of
Yeah, I
the
mean,
second half of the season.
it's not difficult travel because they play a game on Monday and then don't play again until Friday. That's more than enough time. I've
It's
flown back from Connecticut before.
it, it well, it's less difficult travel than it used to be, but I think you still do have to bus to the hotel, to the airport in Hartford to fly out, which is a couple hours, I think, from Mohegan Sun Casino. But anyways, back home this weekend to host Los Angeles and Indiana. It'll be my first time at Climate Pledge Arena since mid-June. I think I can't even remember what the last game was anymore. It's been such a long period of time. Sparks
Because they haven't
worse.
played at home, or you just haven't been to them.
It hasn't worked out. I was sick for a period of time and missed several games.
We
Then
all
there
heard.
was some during Summer League.
Many people said it was the best podcast yet.
Oh well. No, it was the best mock off season. Yeah, that was my flu game,
Hello.
not the Feltman cast. Sparks
If
were
it was your,
surging.
you just bailed on that one. It'd be like if your flu game, if Jordan was like, Scotty, you do all the work here.
Scotty did do a lot of the work in that game, to be clear. Had a great game. Sparks were surging ahead of Cameron Brink's return to the lineup on Tuesday. They then lost to the Las Vegas Aces in that game with Asia Wilson going off for 30 plus points and 10 boards. A game where, Storm wanted both teams to lose somehow, but certainly LA you'd rather because it's starting to look much more like LA is going to make the playoffs and not hand the Storm a lottery pick with a high chance of being the number one pick in 2026. Golden State dealing with some injuries, but they did get the very impressive win Tuesday at Atlanta. They're a game and a half up on the Sparks in ninth. And then the Mystics are two games up in eighth. They also won on Tuesday night. So Sparks playoff chances took a bit of a hit in that one. And the Storm would love, they play the Sparks, I think, three more times the rest of the season. So these are games where the Storm have even more incentive to than usual to get victories to not only, help their own cause, but help keep LA out of the playoffs and get a lottery pick all for themselves. Yeah, they have three of their final 17 games are against the Sparks, two of those at home. So then Sunday, the Fever probably not going to see Caitlin Clark. As she continues to deal with these ongoing muscle injuries. Tuesday, the WNBA leading Minnesota Lynx come to town for, is that the first time this season? No, they did play here in the Commissioner's Cup. That's right, in June. The Storm handed them their first loss. That's right, in June. That was actually the last game I was at, was that Minnesota game on June 11th. So it's been a minute. But an exciting three-game homestand for the Storm as they look to continue putting themselves in position for home court advantage in the first round. That Atlanta loss to Golden State helpful not only in terms of keeping the Sparks out of the playoffs, but also because the Storm are now a half game ahead of the Dream for the fourth seed Fever, a game and a half back, Aces two back in a pretty tight race. Our UW football fall practice starts on Wednesday. It's here. Not a lot of huge updates to report this week. We'll see when they get on the field, but we're getting down to it. Seahawks, unfortunately, some bad news. The worst kind of news you can have from training camp is on Saturday, backup running back Kenny McIntosh suffered an ACL tear early in practice. He went on season ending IR, so wishing him the best for a return in 2026. An opportunity for Damian Martinez, who they drafted in the seventh round, now probably slides up to third on the depth chart. We'll get some competition from George Helani there. The Seahawks also signed undrafted rookie DK Kaufman to fill that spot on the roster vacated by McIntosh.
I really like Damian Martinez at Miami, so
Oh yeah, I liked him at Oregon State.
there we go.
So top that. If someone comes back that they liked him in high school, I'll be very impressed. DK Kaufman played safety at three colleges, finishing up at North Carolina State, but is joining the Seahawks as a running back. If you move him to running back, relative athletic score rates him eighth among that group, based on his combine testing. But the real value for Kaufman is as a kick returner. He led the ACC with 469 yards and a 31.3 average on kickoffs last season. That was one of Kenny McIntosh's role. So certainly it's something the Seahawks are going to be looking at during training camp in the preseason.
It sucks. I mean, I liked Kenny McIntosh. It's one of those things where you just like think about it as a human being and you're waiting the entire season or off season. You're just like, I can't wait to get out there, right? And then the first practice, right? It was the
Not the
first
first
practice,
practice, no.
one of the first practices to tear your ACL and just have your season be over. It just, I don't know. I literally was talking with Luke earlier about like there's two parts of every sport, basically. And it's like, there's always the physical part and then there's the mental part. And this one is real trying on the mental part for Kenny McIntosh to have that happen and have to sit through an entire season and just know that you're like, the clock all of a sudden is just reset to 2026 instantly like that.
I mean, look, obviously, I've always been cognizant of this, talking to players and hearing them talk about it. But particularly now that I have broken my thumb and had to deal with using a splint for a couple of weeks, like there's real life. It's not just like you don't get to play football. It's also like you're going to be on crutches for a long period of time. Real life things are going to be difficult. So, yeah, these injuries suck.
ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton hurts his thumb slightly and now understands athletes.
It's not like I ever
Mini
didn't
said every
understand.
one of those grades is going to go to a plus.
Oh, wow. But they're already a B plus. How could they go any higher?
That's true. Every B becomes. I noticed your off-season grades, by the way. I was trying to count the B pluses and I was like,
Not as
not many,
many. Yeah.
not many.
It's different than with the trade grades, I would say. I don't know. Either that or it's in my head.
The Pelton cast has bullied you out of B pluses, the
Yeah.
Discord.
Not even bullied me, it just memed me out of B pluses. That's the power of the Discord. If you're not on there, check us out. DJ Infrared popped in to say hello to all of us, to introduce himself. I haven't seen him back yet, so
Maybe
hopefully
he's
we will.
working.
On that note,
Thanks for listening.
you've still got about 20 minutes left.
I've got so many things running through my head. I was thinking about Mariners hot takes, and I was like, I had a bunch of different angles, and they were all bad.
Oh no.
Every single one. Because I was like, I just need to wait until after the trade deadline, post trade deadline hot takes. That's, but
I just came up with a Mariners hot takes angle. I'm not going to say it, but
why? What
it's
is it?
too hot for the pod.
What?
Well, it was like a reference to current political situations.
What about current political situations?
So like if the Mariners had a list of people they might be trading for, but they didn't release the list.
That's just like kind of a stupid take.
Oh.
Sorry.
How
I also
so?
judge other hot takes.
I mean, we know that.
I am telling you, I thought through like the most like high concept hot takes. I was talking thinking about like the Colbert Report cancellation.
Yeah.
And weaving it in with the Mariners, because there are some things, this is not a hot take, but like I of course never watched the program. And I was annoyed about its cancellation for obviously the political reasons. But I've been listening to The Town with Matt Bellany. It's like a pretty good podcast.
Yeah.
It's nice to listen to a podcast where a person just like really clearly knows a lot, I feel like.
So you're
Unlike
saying,
this one.
yeah, I was gonna say, wait, did I
Except
tell you
about
this? Okay.
hydroplanes.
Oh, yes. So in my continued efforts to see if AI is completely worthless, I threw into Google Gemini last week. Or no, sorry, this is Microsoft Copilot. Let me not impugn Google here. Who would be good guess for Talkin' Taco Time? And then separately, who would be a good guest for the Fabulous Pelton cast? It hallucinated many people, including a Seattle Times food critic who doesn't exist, various executives who don't exist. I believe it said Pete Carroll was still the coach of the Seahawks. I can't remember that one for sure. But the best part is, do you want to know who they suggested as a guest for the Fabulous Pelton cast?
I'm so fascinated
Think about who the funniest possible answer for this would be.
of who the f
Of course, they
Ichiro?
no. It did suggest Sue Bird. Yeah,
Okay.
which been there. Would love to have her back.
Who's the funniest answer to who it would be?
An expert in Seattle sports who could be on the Pelton cast. Someone who is a prominent national writer.
Oh, Kevin Pelton?
ESPN's Kevin Pelton.
My favorite thing
So
about
we're gonna
the
have to
AI
go
thing,
on and get on that. I mean, it's
that
amazing that
is
it didn't
so
hallucinate
funny.
me.
I don't think it hallucinated you. You exist.
It
The funny thing
hallucinated
about
me off the podcast. That's what it
AI is that
hallucinated.
AI is just generated from the internet. You know
It's
what I mean? And
true.
it's just a Google search, people. It's just a Google search compiled
But it's
into
not a
one.
Google search because Google
But it's.
search would not invent a food critic for the Seattle Times who does not exist.
They just don't exist at all. How did
No.
they find that?
I,
It must have gathered some other names and
that's
like got
why it's co
confused and turned them into one.
that's why it's no, I don't think it's even that. I mean, it was not recognizable. And there were other hallucinations in the Pelton cast one.
That is so
So
funny. God, we should see if Kevin Pelton's around.
can we get that guy? Notoriously difficult to lock down.
Okay, so the thing that I was thinking was, I of course never watched Colbert Report. And I don't see it online. It just does not enter into my world, right?
Yeah.
As which I think is probably true for a lot of people. But I like knowing it exists.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's the kind of the same as baseball.
Oh, I feel like baseball does exist in your world.
No, in my world. But for there are a lot of people that the good thing about baseball is you can just dip in and then you can dip out. But you like knowing that it exists.
You
You
know
know,
what? That was
I
the case
literally.
in my household this evening. The Mariners game was put on, and I was not the one who suggested it, and it was a dip in.
You dipped out probably pretty quickly after that one. Look at him. It's
our
like be off the
guest
list.
did leave pretty quickly. Yes.
Oh, you had a guest.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
It was my wife's suggestion to put the game on, to be clear, not the guest.
But you would never want to out somebody as a baseball fan. But like, I like knowing that it's there for me. Should I ever want to tune in? And it's the same, like, if the late show is going away forever, it's not an institution like the Tonight Show, obviously, like that existed way, way before us. But it's still like, I don't know what year they're on, right? Like probably year 30 or so, maybe a little bit. What
It
year
was
did?
either 93 or 94.
Okay.
Because I vividly recall like being excited about David Letterman going to 11:35 because it was much easier for us to watch him at 11:35, even though I was still too young to be staying up to that point, but a little less too young at 11:35 than 12:35, which was unthinkable at age 11, and you were like 8, maybe 9.
So I was thinking how baseball is kind of like that, though. Baseball is just like, even if I didn't pay attention to baseball for, it's actually a shorter period of time than you would think, I guess.
Yes, because of your fantasy involvement.
I did have a period where I was paying attention to fantasy baseball. I don't know if I would say I was a Mariners fan, but it was at least a decade that I just didn't care
August
at all.
30th, 1993.
Oh, wow, we're coming up on the anniversary. But I want it to be there, right? Like, I want baseball to be there. I also was thinking about a take of that baseball is actually secretly the fastest growing American sport and probably the most likely to continue American sport,
I'm gonna
which I
want to check
maybe
that,
sort of
but
believe.
also on the Discord, their fast growth. And
I
of course,
maybe sort
baseball
of
has
believe that
responded
as
to that
well.
growth by demanding a salary cap and trying to lock out the players.
It's not going to happen. I
You
was
think so?
also thinking, can you explain to me? So the most overpaid athlete, or, overpaid is not the right word, because everybody is paid appropriately in terms of the income, right?
I mean, I don't know that I would say that, but I don't know what you're saying
As a
exactly.
sport, not like every individual, or certain
Got it.
individuals
Yes.
can be paid more than their productivity or whatever, but all athletes should be getting a large portion of the income generated from the sport instead of ownership, right?
Revenue generated, let's
Revenue
say.
generated. So, but the athletes, when you look at it, where it's like this player is making X and this player is making X, when you look at cross sports, NBA players are like drastically way higher, where you're like Corey Brewer's making $25 million. You know what I mean? It's like highest paid athletes, Pat
Corey Brewer
Mahomes.
is now the head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans Summer League team, not making
Oh, look at
$25
that.
million.
Look at that. I don't even know. I don't know fringe NBA players, but yeah, it's like Pat Mahomes, Dalton Knecht, Ja'Marr Chase. Like the NBA players are by far the like most disproportionate. But I think it's because there's just less on a team, so there's more money to go around.
Exactly, yes. And therefore
Baseball.
they have a lot more influence, as it turns out, because there's only five of them on the court at a time.
What also like one really good player. We learned this weekend, like one baseball player just can't make that huge of a difference. I think one football player, I think in terms of,
We just this weekend learned that?
I learned it
Oh, I see.
in the tournament that Luka played in.
I see.
Hey, they won the gold championship.
Before you were like, Mike Trout, that guy just isn't clutch. That's why the Angels don't make the playoffs.
Yes.
Ichiro,
Basketball.
fraud. That's why the Mariners didn't make the
I said what I said.
playoffs.
But NBA is like number one. One player can impact success the most. Football is probably number two, but it's really
Yes.
only if they're a quarterback.
Yes.
And then
Football
baseball's.
quarterback is the NBA. All the other positions of the NFL.
But you can still have a really great quarterback and not be a good team. And I don't know if you could, like, you could have like a top 10 quarterback. I don't think you could be
Yeah.
a top 10 player in the league and like not make the playoffs in the NBA.
You for sure can.
Okay,
The
fair enough.
2004 kid Minnesota Timberwolves called.
Okay.
And I mean, last year, Victor
One
Wembanyama.
years ago they called.
Victor Wembanyama was clearly one of the 10 best players. Not clearly, but he was one of the 10 best players in the league before his deep vein thrombosis diagnosis. And the Spurs were not going to make the playoffs or be particularly close. So I disagree with that. I think it's actually quite similar.
But baseball, the way that baseball's set up with the team control for however many years, like, yes, you can get paid very large sums after that, but I'm like, all of these other sports, you get paid way more earlier.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit, I'm not saying that baseball should be arguing for a salary cap, but like, there is a much bigger, the middle class of football and basketball is probably a little bit higher than the
I don't
middle
know if it's
class of
that
baseball.
necessarily. It's just that because of the fact that it's so difficult to acquire star talent in their prime, star talent not in their prime tends to be wildly overpaid.
In baseball?
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's very similar. Like the NBA rookie contracts, you can specifically show, like, this is what rookies made before. I mean, NFL rookie contracts, I'm sure, are pretty similar too. Like, you can specifically show, this is what rookies made before. This is what they make now. And because the percentage of revenue, as you were saying, is relatively fixed, like, if you're not paying that to players on their rookie contracts, you're paying that to veterans instead. Baseball has that same thing. It's just that the rookie contracts, quote unquote, are like 7 years instead of four in the NBA, up to five in the NFL.
And see, I don't, is that good for, because like there's certain, like Bryce
It's
Harper
good
being mad
for
about it.
the members of the union, because guess what? The members of the union are disproportionately likely to be out of those con or to
Old
not have to worry
players.
about those contracts going forward. Whereas, you know who is going to worry about those contracts going forward? Players who are currently in the minor leagues or haven't been drafted yet.
Yeah.
Who are
I mean,
not part of
also,
the
like,
union.
there's just way more people who play baseball. They're way more professional baseball players than any other sport, if you include minors. So I kind of get it from that perspective. But if you're Cole Young could have like a couple pretty good seasons. And then if injury or whatever, he just doesn't develop, washes out, it's like Cole Young could not be that wealthy long term. Whereas I feel like in the NBA, at the very least, like the amount of money that they're making is, I don't even know. Like,
It's the
what is
difference
it standard, like
between.
a first round pick contract versus Cole Young is a massive difference, right?
Yes. I mean, Cole Young will be making the minimum for at least a couple of years and then arbitration for a few. You know, I think you have generally. Like, arbitration is basically when players get off their rookie contracts in the NBA, but the before that, it's much less money. Basically, everyone's at the minimum or
He did
close
get a
to it.
signing bonus at the very least.
Yeah, I mean, that's the difference. Like, it's just a totally different structure. But yes, if you were designed to be like, what's the most fair to the average player? I don't think you would design it like baseball. Like, if they blew up the entire financial structure of baseball, it might be better for the players, but I understand why they are reluctant to do that and skeptical that it would serve anyone but the owners.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just like those the pre-arbitration years, you could be obviously like MLB teams are now trying to buy players out of those years and
Right, but they're
extend them
still
for
doing it at
longer.
a discount because of the fact that the teams are taking much less of a risk than the
And they have
players are. Like,
the
if
MLB
Evan
has
White goes
more
bust,
leverage.
like, it doesn't make that big of a difference for the Mariners in the end. But it makes a huge difference for like it's great for Evan White that he got the money when he did.
Yeah, but there just aren't that many Evan Whites. The people who are more likely is like
Well, that's the
Bobby
point,
Witt
is
and
that
Julio or whatever.
yes, because of that risk, because the players are taking on more of the risk, therefore they are willing to settle for what ultimately prove below market contracts until they make it to free agency and then
In
get too
2035.
much. Well, I mean, and not them specifically.
I mean, I guess Bobby Witt's deal is a pretty freaking good buyout his arbitration years deal. He's making like it up to 35 billion guaranteed for a couple of seasons. And then he has like personal opt-outs at 35 million for 4 years, well into his 30s. So that's just a better deal. But I mean, he could be making 50 million for those seasons if he's good enough or more. And also like the way that the money is going to go up by 2031. I don't know. Yeah, it was a little bit like it's better, but also it's not better in some ways. Which is why teams value that sweet, sweet team control so much. Okay, another thought that I had was
Oh, we haven't had enough.
Ken Griffey Jr. retired 2 years before Luka was born.
Okay.
And I was like, does Ken Griffey Jr. feel like a like current relevant MLB player? And he was like, yes, of course. And I was thinking about how I think this is a modern phenomenon, and I think it's because of video games. And I think it's probably across all sports, basketball, baseball, and football. Players from the 90s and the 2000s seem relevant way more than they did when we were children.
The equivalent players seemed
Yes.
relevant.
Well, he has like Terry Pendleton and his MLB The Show team, like his Road to the Show or whatever. Not Road to the Show. I can't remember what it's called. The like MLB The Show team that you like collect players on your own and then you go play against other people with those players. And I'm like, no fucking way would we have heard of the like that equivalent of Terry Pendleton to us.
Terry Pendleton's prime was 20 years before Luca was born, so this is someone whose prime would have been in the 60s.
And also,
and
like,
not that good.
He did win an MVP, I will
Terry
say.
Pendleton won an MVP?
He won an MVP, and he finished second the next year.
In Atlanta or in St. Louis?
In Atlanta, his first year in Atlanta in 91.
Wow, that's new information to me. The list of players who won MLB MVP never ceases to amaze. I mean, obviously you have two of them per year, but
he retired 14 years before Luca was born. So
someone who retired in 1968 was amazing
yeah,
to me.
Yes, and so won an MVP in the one MVP in the 50s. I could almost assure you that I don't know if they had MVPs in the 50s, but like
they did, yes, have MVPs in the 50s.
There's definitely an MVP in the 1950s that I have not heard of, unless they're all like the most legendary players of all time.
For some reason, the name that popped into my head was the pitcher Robin Roberts, not to be confused with the journalist Robin Roberts. Not an MVP, but a 7-time All-Star. Is he a Hall of Famer? Not quite. Oh yeah, he is. Yeah, fourth ballot, 1976. Like, I'm aware of his name and that he existed, but would I have known anything about him at age 14 or 13? Probably not. Yeah. Yeah, that probably checks out.
And I don't think there was anybody, even aside from Babe Ruth, who retired. Like, this would have been somebody who retired in 1983, who still like old players seemed really old.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the quality of the video. I agree. I mean, I think there are like Reggie Jackson. I don't know when he retired. He's someone who would have seemed pretty relevant to us, I think, at that point.
Have you ever heard of a person named Jeff Burrows? Do we know that name?
His son played in MLB, right? Sean Burrows?
Oh, that's Sean. Maybe 1974 MVP. That's even
Yeah, I'm
like
pretty sure
recent.
that's
Like
Sean Burrows' dad.
Boog Powell, I only know from the barbecue.
Yes.
1963 AL MVP Elston Howard.
I'm familiar with Elston Howard. I mean,
Are you?
I've spent more time probably reading baseball history than
Solio
you have.
Versailles.
Yeah, that's just a name to me.
I mean, there are like big name players, obviously. You know, it's like Frank Robinson, Roberto Clemente, Willie Mays.
Yogi Berra was someone who seemed very relevant to us. I
Did
mean, he
he?
was a three-time MVP.
He seemed like a like very old person, though.
Well, I agree. He seemed very old. I don't know. Yeah, I can see that part of the point. He was 57 when I was born, so he's considerably older than Griffey would have been. But these are like, yeah, I don't know.
Do we have a tribute to Washington State's own Ryne Sandberg?
We do, yes.
Okay.
We did.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, I think it's true for the NBA as well. Like early 2000s NBA players.
Well, it's just
I think.
like, yeah, I think the quality of the video is a big factor. Like, you can go watch a bunch of Sean Kemp dunks on YouTube.
But
like,
it's that,
Julius
but
Erving dunks
I think the
existed,
video
but how was I going
games.
to find them? I know,
I think
I agree.
Because
I
like
don't
they didn't
disagree with
have
that.
old players in games. You had the NBA. That was it.
Sometimes they didn't even have current players in games.
The rookies putting in the name for when you had to make the rookies, you
Or
had to put
Michael
in the name and then it
Jordan.
would generate them. Or it didn't have Michael Jordan. Man, this fucking Morgan Wallen concert. It was like the most important thing that happened in children's baseball world at the very least. I
Was
think
it?
City of Seattle was, and probably the south and the north parts, extreme north and extreme south.
Well,
It was like
who appeared at the, did Marshawn Lynch appear at the concert?
he did.
Yeah.
The amount of people on Saturday who were wearing Morgan Wallen merch was just like, good God, people. But that kind of happens, that kind of phenomenon. You could tell when somebody's like really, really like there are artists who play. Like the Lumineers are going to play at T-Mobile Park. I'm not going to see a ton of people with Lumineers merch. It really is like it's strictly
I
like.
don't know if the people who like the Lumineers are the people kind of people that like wear a lot of merch.
I mean, I'm sure they're doing insane merch numbers, but like
I'm sure they're doing just fine.
There's a certain few shows, like the Kendrick SZA show is just like permeates. It's still like it becomes a part of culture in that place after they play a show that people are like wearing the merch. And the Wallen show was one of those. Those are the only two for this year that I
People are
think were.
saying that next Thursday's Death Cab concert is going to be like that.
Did you see the Death Cab merch? Have you seen it?
I have not seen that.
They have one. You wouldn't know this because you never had an iPod. But on iPods, you had to name things, and I was a psycho about this. It was the thing that as you can imagine. So if you named like the band, even with like a different space or something, it would show up as a different artist on your iPod while you were scrolling through.
Makes sense.
And so they have a shirt that has like five different ways to like spaces with Death Cab for Cutie or whatever. Because it's the Plans reunion or the whatever anniversary
Yeah,
tour.
20th anniversary, yes.
I thought it was like a little clever, but also it's like pretty niche. Like the iPod era didn't last for that long. So that's something that almost nobody before and nobody after understands what it means. It is
And some, not
exactly,
even some people during, but you know what the number
it's
one,
dedicated to the target audience of the show, though.
you know what the number one thing on the Death Cab for Cutie merch page is?
What is it? Death Cobby for Cutie?
Oh, I wish it were. I wish would that it were.
They don't have their
It's,
tour merch online yet.
it is obviously, yeah, I guess they don't. It is Ichiro's theme. So there you go. We brought it full circle.
Are we going to talk about Ichiro more?
We did, yes.
Okay. And can I do the negative take now? I did the positive one before.
That people have sat through an hour plus, they get to hear the negative take.
I just, you know my feelings about people being graded on a curve. This is how we'll end the podcast.
Oh, wow.
We're ending the podcast the same way that we end every podcast with Ichiro slander. But
I just want
people are
to
like,
preface this by
Ichiro's
saying,
hilarious. And I'm like,
I want to preface this by saying this is culturally insensitive.
it's not culturally insensitive. He insulted Miami. Like what?
I think he
What part of
insulted
it?
the Marlins. I don't think he insulted Miami.
Okay.
Maybe you didn't understand Ichiro's speech.
First off, it wasn't funny. Like the idea that people are just like, oh my God, Ichiro's hilarious. And I'm like, just because he's accepting an award doesn't make a thing that's not funny funny. I'm sorry. Like it wasn't funny conceptually as a joke. First off. Second off, you spent your prime with the Mariners, dog. And you have the gall to insult the two-time World Series champions, Miami Marlins or
I mean,
Florida Marlins?
this is an interesting point because I think that the Marlins speak to a couple of the things we're talking about. The Miami Marlins, not still relevant from the 1990s, despite winning a World Series in that decade and one not
How
long thereafter.
relevant? What does that mean? There just aren't a lot of people who live in Miami. It's a small city.
Wait, what?
Or
Do
what?
you
You
actually
think the
think that?
90s Marlins aren't relevant?
Yeah, they're not relevant because they barely played together. And it's a strong case for, like, the
Oh, I don't
flags
agree with
fly
that at all.
forever thing. Like, actually, in some cases, it's not true because the 90s Mariners are far more culturally relevant
Okay,
than the
so if what
Marlins.
you're saying is if you could have a collection of like four of the greatest baseball players of all time together for like if your
Yeah.
threshold is that, sure, I
That's not my
totally
threshold.
agree.
That's, but I'm just
But
saying that,
also, this
like,
is just in
having those
Seattle.
players
Ken Griffey
ultimately.
Jr. is relevant. I'm not sure every if people like I think Edgar's
I mean, I don't
like
think
a
Edgar
name.
Martinez is, but I do think Randy Johnson and Alex Rodriguez are pretty fucking relevant.
Both of
I
them are
mean, my
relevant.
close personal
Alex
friend.
Rodriguez is like a footnote, though.
To the Mariners? Or
Yes,
is
to
oh,
the
okay.
Mariners. Ken Griffey Jr. is still relevant. And all of them maybe are individually, but not in terms of the Mariners. Or you talk about it in terms of, wow, they had all these fucking players and didn't win.
Yes.
Gary Sheffield is
And
relevant,
I
good
can see
sir.
that no
Edgar
one.
Renteria is relevant.
We're gonna have to conduct a survey outside of Curita to see how many people remember Edgar Renteria.
But also,
Also, they
the
remember him as
Marlins
a member of
have
the Red
made
Sox.
one less playoffs than the Mariners have in 16 less years.
I'm not arguing that the Mariners are a more successful franchise. The point I'm making is
No,
that winning
a
World
less
Series.
successful. Or you're not arguing that the Mariners are a more successful franchise than the
Yes.
Marlins. Yes.
What I'm arguing is that winning a World Series ultimately isn't
Two.
actually that individually memorable of a thing.
Two. I think you're viewing this from the perspective of a person the furthest city away in the country. And I do think there are people. My boss is from Miami, and if I asked him if that World Series was important to him, I
But that's not my
guarantee
point. The point is to ask someone from Milwaukee, someone who's not close to either of these
ask someone
cities.
from Milwaukee if the Mariners are relevant. Ask them about the 95 Mariners, and they'd be like, "What? What are you talking about? The 95? Oh, that team that won a division round game?" But actually, they would say, "What the fuck are you talking about?" The way that people perceive the Mariners is as bad. That's it.
I don't disagree with that. But like there's no John Boyce history of the Florida of the Miami Marlins or the Florida
There
Marlins here.
might be, though. We are so much in an echo chamber of, you don't think that there's Marlins 90s nostalgia to be found on the internet? Because I assure you, you're wrong.
John Boyce Marlins brings up the
I'm
saddest
not
plate
saying that
appearance of all
there's
time.
exactly, it's like, I'm not saying there's precisely a John Boyce piece about the Marlins. Are the Mariners a curious franchise? Yes, they are, but they're also like known for being bad. No, I agree.
The
Winning is
villain
bad.
for being bad is
No, I
known.
agree. I agree. Winning is bad.
I don't know if you're aware of
I've been
this.
on the record.
Did you know that the Boston Red Sox and Chicago Cubs, that there was a lot of discussion about the fact that those teams had never won, had gone extended periods, not never, but had gone extended periods without winning a World Series? Are you aware of that? That was
No,
culturally relevant.
they were much less interesting teams after they won a World
And
Series.
it really is true. That's why you should be rooting against the Mariners.
But also, I think the Red Sox in the early 2000s, people might remember them fondly.
I do think
And
people, well, I don't know if they necessarily remember them fondly, but
I
they
think there's
remember
a
them.
Cubs team that people, what is 2018? Was it 19?
It was 2016, very notably.
16? Okay.
Happened a few weeks before an election. Yeah, that was October, November
I think
2016.
people do remember that team, that Cubs team.
Did I say a couple weeks? It was like a few days. It was not that far apart.
I do not agree with you about this at all. Like the Marlins became because it was all of these players collected at one time. Like it's that's what made them the most interesting. Moises Alou, Livan Hernandez.
But that's what makes them interesting to baseball fans, not what makes them interesting to casual fans.
Who is it? What you actually think the Mariners are interesting to casual fans? I'm supposed to be the biased one on this podcast.
I mean, maybe it's solely because of Griffey.
Because they make statues from their division round wins. They had it is basically the pillars of the 90s. It's like I think Griffey is like basically number one. You could argue Bonds, maybe McGuire, Sosa, something like that. Like
Ripken, don't forget Cal.
I think Cal Ripken is notable, but like kids don't give a shit about Cal Ripken. I
Well,
don't, he's not lasted.
I agree with that.
Because the thing is, you have to
Do
have
you
moments.
think kids care about Sammy Sosa?
They were the McGuire Sosa thing together. If it wasn't both of them, then it would be more of it. It's why Juan Gonzalez hasn't exactly lasted that much.
Fair.
And Griffey was fun. This is
Yeah.
actually an interesting point against what I was saying earlier about children remember these players. But like, if I asked Luca what team Juan Gonzalez played for, he would know. And then I had Pedro, and that's kind of it. There might be. I mean, like Frank Thomas was pretty exciting.
Yeah, definitely still gets talked about.
There are a few others. Erectile dysfunction adds. He gets talked about. The big hurt.
And she'll love it too.
I do not agree with you about the
For
Marlins, though. Those players coming together for that team to win a World
record,
Series.
not technically an EDM.
Sorry, I take it back. All apologies to the big hurt, Frank Thomas.
And to Doug Flutie.
But that's a it's a little Mariners build to think that the Mariners matter in that way. I just do not think kids are like, oh yeah, Edgar.
I don't disagree with you about that. I think it's Griffey, and if people remember A-Rod, the Mariners being part of A-Rod's story, which I think they do in Ichiro. Like, he obviously wasn't on the team in the 90s, but Ichiro is a very
Yes.
famous and popular baseball player, as it turns out.
Who slandered the people of Miami.
Unfunnily.
I'm just like, Doc,
Which
you
part of
played
this
for the
was funny?
Mariners. Do you have any sense of where you played in your career? You'd
No,
heard of the Mariners?
not Cleveland either. Well, on that note,
Thanks for listening.
thanks.
We got to the best part of the podcast at the very end. We haven't done the beginning part, but I know.